up, Power Players? It's your host and founder of Empower Nani. I'm coming to you live with another episode of Power Talk. So welcome to Season 1, Episode 52. Let's go! Now, I bet you guys are wondering, Nani, who'd you bring into the Power Talk today? And I brought in my friend, Tyler Jack Harris. For those of you guys that don't know who Tyler Jack Harris is, you're about to find out. And for those of you guys that do know him, you're about to dive in. In the last 3 years, Tyler has gone from unemployed to $650,000 a year by waging war on personal change. Since January of 2017, Tyler has gone from zero to 49 million in weekly reach on social media as he began to document his life in his blog called The Daily Bread. Going into 2018, Tyler wanted to go even deeper into showing what it takes to perform at a high level day in and day out. So what he is now is the national coordinator of a life insurance company, the owner and operator of Motivation Kings, and the co-host of the Sales Wolf podcast and the Breadwinner podcast. In this episode, we dive into mindset, focus, discipline, self-mastery, and business. I'm so excited for you guys to dive in. Make sure you do one of two things. Make sure you turn off all your noise, turn off all your distractions. Make sure you tuned in. And secondly, make sure you have a pen and paper handy, a pencil and a notebook, whatever the case may be, your notes on your Apple, your notes on your Android, whatever. Just make sure that you're taking down these notes. And most importantly, after you're done taking down these notes, after you're done listening to this conversation, make sure that you take massive action. Because we all know that action's cool, but action without execution leads to nothing. And we all know that nothing results in nothing. So my last request is this. You ready? I'm ready. Let's go. Empower is an accountability group that I host in a mastermind group, and I host these power talks so I can bring in my tribe and they can just get a live view of who I'm speaking to and a powerful conversation. So I'm excited to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So with that being said, we can get started. If you can, Tyler, give the people a little insight of who you are and what you currently do.
Yeah, so I'm Tyler Jack Harris, live in Greenville, South Carolina. And by trade, I guess you could say, I'm in the insurance business. But we really look at ourselves as a leadership development company disguised as an insurance agency. And I think that's an interesting framework to probably put around any business that you're potentially could be in. But live here in Greenville, do a lot of traveling and coaching with our agents across the country. You know, we've got about, I think right now, around 90 agents all over the U.S. And so I'm in the field with them, you know, coaching, training, leading. I was in, last week I was in West Virginia. Week before that, Michigan, Ohio, Kansas, back to Ohio, Maryland, Kentucky. So just kind of all over. And, you know, balancing all that with what I'm doing on social media, which is a lot, really dove deep, you know, head first about 2.5 years ago and started documenting my life and put out over 5,000 pieces of content. Since then, I've got two podcasts, the Sales Wolves podcast. I've got the Breadwinner podcast. I've got a daily vlog and a weekly vlog. And just, you know, 3 to 4 posts on top of that going out every day. And really with the intention of showing people the reality of what it takes to be successful, that it's not easy, that it is difficult. And that's not exactly what everybody wants you to see on social media. They want to tell you how easy it is and, you know, 6 weeks to 6 figures and 6 months to millionaire and all this nonsense. But I wanted to show people what it really takes and, you know, as transparent and, you know, vulnerable as I can possibly be and show the ups and downs and everything in between. So that's what we've been doing. But really my life, and we'll probably get into this, but my life has really been in a massive transformation over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And so just all efforts right now and trying to keep that upward trajectory climbing.
Awesome. And you know, why I picked you as a power player to be a part of this talk is because I'm really inspired by your story. I love the fact that you want to do this because there's so many gurus out there. I call it a guru, someone that wants to be a coach, someone that wants to put out value, but all they're doing is just BSing everybody. And I'm a victim of the gurus because I'm a course junkie, as I say. I buy a lot of courses. I want to get mentored. I want to get coached. And I realize that a lot of people will take advantage of you for it. So I created this community to put the right resources in, and I really just wanted to make an impact. With that being said, you gave a very humble beginning, but I want to let you guys know main points about this power player. So he's a true entrepreneur, okay? He has sold over 8,000 life insurance policies, one-on-one, face-to-face, right in the flesh, okay? No online services, no lead generation from Facebook, no easy stuff. He's a door knocker. Now, that's not the best part. The best part about this is that he has hosted two podcasts. He is a blogger, and he has two multi-million dollar life insurance agencies. And he still showed up to this phone call today. Now, one thing that I wanted to dive into, because I know a lot of people, and I'm glad you're okay with talking about the vulnerable things. A lot of people just go right into the success, and that's cool. I see that on Instagram. That's cool. I know that you're successful, but what I want to know is, like, how did you really get to that point? So the first part that I want to dive into, Tyler, is this. How was your childhood like? Were you always like an entrepreneur? Did you have a rough beginning? Like, how was that childhood factor like? Because we plant seeds.
Yeah, so it's great to start there. And so I appreciate being able to talk about it. You know, I grew up in a great home, two great parents, and, you know, nothing really painful, no real struggle as I grew up. And, you know, that's a lot of people's story. And I'm in this weird place now where I kind of wish there was some more pain. I wish there was some more struggle early on, because we're all going to face it. And I would rather face it as a child than face it as a 30-year-old, right? But, you know, growing up was great. Loving, you know, mother and father, got good grades in school, you know, went off to college, did well there. And it really wasn't until after college that life happened to me, and I started to experience some of that pain and some of those struggles that I'm now so grateful for. You know, for me, it wasn't really an entrepreneurial kid. I always had some type of little hustle going on, though. Whether it was, you know, a friend of mine's dad had a fundraising company where they sold these coupon books, and I figured out that I could just buy those coupon books from him and go sell them as a fundraiser. It just so happened that the fundraiser was supporting, you know, Tyler Harris Foundation. and so I would, you know, knock on doors in high school and sell these coupon books, and I would have other kids in school selling them as well. But I was always a very, very competitive child. Was very involved in sports, but, you know, more competitive than the average kid. I remember my dad a couple of months ago was actually telling me a story about a time when I was playing soccer, and this was like, you know, third, fourth grade, and the game went into penalty kicks, and I just decided on my own. I played like midfield or forward, and I just decided that it was important for me to be the goalie during these penalty kicks. Had never played goalie before, and went up to our goalie and say, "Hey, man, you know, coach said that you need to get out, and I'm in." Coach definitely didn't say that, and I was the goalie for those penalty kicks. Never having played goalie ever before, but to me, if it was going to come down to these penalty kicks, I wanted me to be in the position to make the impact when it mattered the most. And that's kind of just been a common thread throughout my life. Highly, highly, highly competitive. That's why sales for me was such a good fit, because it was that instant transactional competitive nature that really drove me. Sometimes I felt like I wanted to be at the top of the leaderboard more than I wanted the money that came along with being at the top of the leaderboard. But those were the things that got me up every morning and kind of got me up in a full sprint with my hair on fire to make sure, you know, that I was leading. And, you know, as I progressed in my life and progressed in my career, it was really that leading by example, that proved to be such a valuable, valuable tool, because I never wanted to tell anybody to do something that I wasn't doing myself. And I wasn't doing at a high level myself. Yeah. And, you know, quite frankly, here in the past few years, as I've transitioned in more to a corporate role within our organization, it was a difficult thing, and I probably hung on a little bit too long staying in the field and selling, because it made me uncomfortable to not be in it and doing those things that I was coaching on a daily basis. But as I mentioned, you know, life happened to me after college, some struggles, some pain. I went through a failed marriage. I had a wife that had an affair, and it was just a really, really difficult time over a course of a year trying to make that work, and ultimately didn't. During that exact same time, also went through a business failure and found myself really in a bad place. I was alone for the first time ever, you know, having grown up in a family, and then went off to college and lived with a bunch of guys and got married the month after school ended, as far as college ended. And yeah. I'd never been alone.
So, and I have a question, if you don't mind interrupting you there, because I'm going to dive all into that. That's actually what I'm so intrigued by. So I watched one of your videos, and one of your videos were speaking about being an alcoholic. It was your 100th episode. I believe that December 1st, you chose to make your decision to be sober. Yep. And one thing that you highlighted was, you know, my childhood, I always was competitive. I know that team sports is a big edge to being an entrepreneur, because you got the thick skin. But then a point where you just said right there was college, right? And I want to hit your college point, because you stated in college you were that guy. You used to drink a lot. You used to do crazy stuff. They knew you for, hey, that's Tyler. Some crazy stuff's going to go on at this party. And necessarily, you know, it's not a bad thing, because like you said, it's made you who you are now. But then you just stated a point that I didn't know. I didn't know that you got married right out of college. So with that, it's kind of maybe a mental question, but if you could dive into it, do you feel like you were just filling yourself up with constant voids because you didn't really know the direction you wanted to go? Because it just sounds like from like, the knowing what your present is now, knowing the things that have occurred, a lot of when you were younger was like the falling point of like your college years, is when you were like, man, I don't really know where I'm going. Would you blame that, a little loss of direction, to make those irrational decisions or to be in those predicaments?
You know, I really think, and it's a great question, I think it was my personality. To this day, I'm all in or all out. In whatever I do, I am going to go completely all in. And whether that meant drinking or whether that meant, you know, working out or, you know, whatever that might be, a business, a competition, I'm going to be all in. And so for me, that was kind of my struggle with alcohol. I wasn't just a guy that could go out and have a couple drinks and have a good time. Like if I was going to drink, like, you know, it was going to be an epic night full of just debauchery. I was really, really good at it too. And so, you know, that just ultimately leads to, you know, destruction in your life. But yeah, I think that, you know, has catapulted me in my career though, is that exact same mentality that when used in the wrong way with alcohol was used in the right way with sales and competing on a production standpoint and, you know, going all in on the entrepreneurial ventures and going all in on, you know, documenting my life on social media. It's just the only speed I know.
Yeah.
And so when it came to that decision, which was December 1st, 2017, to quit drinking, it really wasn't even a struggle. It was like, I just made the decision one day. I said, well, I'm done.
Yep.
And then it was all in the opposite direction. Never took another sip. Never even thought about taking another sip of alcohol. It's almost 2 years now.
That's when you became intentional, man. That's when
you
became intentional. When you become intentional, it's like what Erwin McManus said to you. Like, you know, you're going to come across things, and the things that you come across, it's not really the worst things in life, the opportunities you're missing. It's actually the most amazing ones.
Yeah.
And you're just saying no because it doesn't align with your current purpose. And I love that. And with that, I want to dive into 2014 with you. So 2014, that's when Tyler hit rock bottom. But I don't really think it was rock bottom, because a superhero came out of it, right? So 2014, rock bottom. You got a failed marriage. You had a failed business. Things were just going downhill for you. Now, what was the original business that you failed at? I didn't know what it was, so I wanted to ask that. What business was that?
So I was a financial advisor.
Okay, cool. Yep. And that year, your wife got into an affair with someone else. Did you find this out before your business went into a spiral?
It was actually a couple months after. So it was as I was kind of dealing with the aftermath of the business failure. Yep. Found that out. Got a phone call late one night from a guy that proceeded to tell me he was the one that had been sleeping with my wife for the last 7 months. So that was a difficult time. Certainly. But, again, ultimately, and where we'll, I'm sure, take this conversation to is realizing that everything is your fault. Yep. And taking ownership of every single circumstance in your life. And so looking back now, like I take full ownership of that. And a lot of times I get pushback on that, especially from men. They're like, oh man, that wasn't your fault. She did this or she did that. I'm like, yeah, but if I had been the absolute best husband, created the absolute best environment in my house, would that affair still happen? Maybe, but probably not.
Yeah, maybe.
And so I have to take ownership for that. And I'm so grateful for that happening now because it's made me the husband that I am today and the father that I am today. And if I had not gone through that, then I wouldn't have that perspective. Like the guy that just kissed his wife down there below on the video. That was awesome. Oh. I wouldn't have that perspective now of really looking at every day as an opportunity to be the best husband that I can be. That's not the way I was looking at every day back then. It was a difficult time, especially with those things, simultaneously occurring.
Yeah, both happening. They must have really hit your confidence, your ego, yep. just like your spirit. And with that, I think that's why it's the highlight of your story, because I know a lot of people that I've interviewed, I have some amazing people, but the thing that I've noticed about them is that when they get into that hole, they're in that hole for like a while, And you were there for a little bit, but when this happened to you, you did two things, and I literally had to write them down. You did two major keys. One, you said it already. You knew exactly where you were supposed to be in your life, good or bad, and you owned it because you're like, you know what? I'm here right now because of me, and I want to get to where I want to go because of me. So both situations, it's my fault, ownership. I love that. And then the second part you said that was like so important was mentors started to breathe life into you. Now, you stated that you got yourself around some people that they wanted to help you out. You're still a little, but they just kept trying to pour life into you. And being in that environmental change at that shift is when it really got the light of, hey, you want to start up and being in the insurance agency. The first year he hit 300K, people. Like, listen to this. First year, 300K. Second year, 450,000. Third year, 650,000. And then after that, he ended up just becoming a multimillionaire with two agencies. And mind you, his wife just left him. His business just failed. And rather than sitting there curling up in a little ball, he probably was sad for a week and he lifted that ass up and said, no. Like, I'm going to get around good mentors. No, I'm not going to let this ruin me. And I'm going to take ownership for this. And like, for example, this call is amazing. This great guy's amazing. No one showed up on Labor Day. That's their own fault for missing out on a great opportunity. That's their own fault for not wanting to show up and be in the presence of someone like this. So with that being said, how was that shift for you when you're like going from broke to going to like slowly lifting, your altitude of opportunities are going? What was that like for you? How was that transition from like losing it all to like, whatever, I already got it going?
So, I mean, it was difficult, very difficult. It was painful. And, I found myself in this place where I was really playing the victim, pointing fingers, pointing blame at everybody else but me. And looking back now, I know that it was just an excuse to be lazy at that time. What I had was fear of going all in again and having it taken away from me because I had gone all in on that business. Business failed. I had gone all in. I wouldn't say gone all in, but I had the marriage taken away from me. And so there was this fear of, do I go all in again and potentially have that taken away from me? And it just put me in this place where I was just paralyzed by that fear and paralyzed by playing the victim. Until you take those fingers that you're pointing at other people and point them back at yourself, you will continue to be shackled in fear and paralyzed and will not be able to move forward. And so it wasn't until that moment where I took ownership and just like you said, everything is my fault. I am exactly where I'm supposed to be based off the decisions that I've made, based off the things that I've done. And that was the ultimate encouragement for me is that if I got myself into that situation, I could get myself out of it. And so for me, it started with this process I call waging war on personal change. And the reason I say waging war is because, you know, a lot of people are, you know, into self-development, or I'm growing myself, or I'm becoming a better person. But you know, I was in such a place where just that surface level growth wouldn't actually get me to where I needed to go. Like I needed to wage war because I was in a really bad mental place. I was depressed. I was out of shape. I was fat. You know, I was like, it was just in a terrible situation. And so waging war on personal change for me meant going again, all in, but going all in on me. And it started with my body. Now I would love to say that that was some type of like altruistic, you know, reason. Like, you know, I knew that my energy level or that the rest of my life would be determined by, you know, the way I treated my body. It was actually just the fact that I found myself single and fat and disgusting looking. And,
hey man, we've been there. I was at a point of my weight. I did not look good, feel good. I went ham on working out. I got my hair done, and it does something to you different.
Oh, yeah.
When you look good, you feel good, you are good. So I get that. I definitely.
Yeah. And so I went all in, you know, diet and gym, lost like 70 something pounds. And that built my confidence back up tremendously. And then with my self-development and growth, you know, I began just surrounding myself with positive messages. And I really began auditing the things that I was allowing in and realizing how much negativity was around us, negative people, negative influences, negative things. Like I quit watching TV. I quit, you know, listening to the radio. I just was constantly either reading or listening to books, listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos. It was the only thing that I spent any spare time that I had, or any time in the car, any time between meetings, any time, you know, any spare second. There was something being fed into me that was positive, that was building me up. And, you know, it was really that time that these mentors came into my life. And, you know, I'd love to sit here and say that I sought out these mentors specifically and strategically, but they just really kind of just appeared. Yeah. Now, obviously, when they appeared, I jumped on the opportunity for them to become my mentors and for them to really just surround myself with them and be in their presence so that they could rub off on me and so that they could speak life into me. But I was still in a bad place financially and with my confidence level that I could go out and, you know, make a significant income and kind of regain what I had lost. And they really did speak confidence and life back into me. I really believe that they saw more in me than I saw myself at that time. And they gave me an opportunity to come on board with their insurance agency. And it was exactly the right fit for where I was in my life, because it was fast paced, highly transactional. And I could go put in some effort and get some results. I could go put some more effort, get more results, and on and on and on and on. And it would build that confidence as I would do that every single time. And so, you know, to say I made 300 grand my first year, I mean, I was flat broke and in debt. I had to borrow the money to get started in the business when I first got started. And, you know, you go from there and 12 months later, it was actually $303,000 deposited into my bank account. And it was life-changing. Not just the money, it's the freedom, the confidence that was built by generating it, because I earned every single penny of it. And it just opened my eyes up to what was possible when I took that all in, you know, personality that I had and applied it towards something good and something that was productive, and you know, what fruit would be, would come from that. And so literally the rest is history. Like that was the beginning of where I am now. And had those mentors not come into my life, I wouldn't be sitting here in front of you guys. I'm fully aware of that. And that's why I think there's this misnomer that there's no such thing as luck. I just don't agree with that. I think that it takes a massive amount of hard work, but there are going to be some lucky things that happen in your life. Yeah. But it takes that ability to capitalize on those opportunities when they happen that most people don't have. Like most people have tremendous amounts of lucky opportunities that appear in their life, but they don't actually take note of them and then go after them and pursue them. So they never really, they look at themselves as unlucky. I truly believe I'm one of the hardest workers out there, but that was a fortunate position for those guys to come into my life and give me this opportunity. And, you know, that's the way I live my life is trying to repay what they did for me, for everybody else around me.
Law of reciprocation, baby. I love it. So what I want to know, because you said it, you know, it's hard freaking work and it's not easy. And sometimes it does take just other people believing in you when you don't believe in yourself. So let's go back to that point right there. Let's say there's someone listening to this conversation right now, and they are at that point with their business, you know, where they had to borrow the money. They're trying to get ramped up. What is that one thing that you did every day that helped you, win? Like for me, it's showing up. Like I know that even if I'm tired, even if I have other things to do, if I made a commitment, I got to show up. So that's for me. I show up every day. What would it be for you when you were in that moment?
You know, I think it ultimately stemmed from my belief and trust in those mentors. You know, that's what gave me the ability to go all in. I just believed what they were telling me was true. And they had created a system that I could follow.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here today telling you that it was not my system. I didn't create it. I didn't come up with it. I've helped perfect it over the last few years and have taken it to a completely new level. But they had created a system and they told me, hey, if you plug into this system, take the hard work ethic that we know you have, plug it into this vehicle, it's going to take you wherever in the world you want to go. And so I just did exactly what they told me to do. I didn't try to do anything different. I didn't try to do anything my own way. I didn't try to change anything. I literally did absolutely everything that they told me to do, word for word, never veered from it. And then played this game in my head of, okay, well, if I put in 3x effort into that vehicle, will it take me 3x further? And it did. If I put 5x, 10x, 100x, and there was never a point in time where I found some type of diminishing returns from the effort that was put into that system. And, you know, that to me is so huge because there are systems out there, there are companies out there, there are businesses out there that have a blueprint. The problem is most people try to be more entrepreneurial than they need to be, and they try to somehow make it their own, or they use their past successes as, you know, the reason why. Well, I understand that that's the way you guys do this, but here's how I'm going to do it. And they fail. Yep. We have agents that we bring on every day that they try to do that and they fail. The ones that succeed are the ones that actually do what we tell them to do. And, you know, quite frankly, my back was against the wall. And I love people's stories when their back is against the wall, when there's no contingency plan, when there's no safety net there to catch them, because I didn't really have anything else to fall back on. Like I had to trust in the fact that what they were telling me was true. I had to make this work. And so I went completely all in on it and put more effort into it than anyone had ever put in. And it was really a defining moment in our business, because at that time, you know, we had maybe 20, 30 agents across the country. The most policies anybody had ever sold was like, you know, 30, 40, 50 policies. And the owners, the founding partners of this company told me, you have an opportunity here to go down. And it was a territory in Georgia. I lived in South Carolina, so there was going to be a ton of traveling, but you had the opportunity to go down to Georgia and prove out what's possible with this system. And so it wasn't, you know, but a few weeks later that I had my first 50 policy week, then a first 75 policy week, then a first 100 policy week. Then I did, you know, the record, I did 238 life insurance policies in 4 days. Sold like 297 policies in a 10-day streak. And the coolest thing is now when we have our leaderboard every single week within our organization, every single week the top 10 is over 100 policies. And so it's kind of like that 4-minute mile that no one thought was possible. Once I went and ran that 4-minute mile, then all of a sudden it opened up the minds to those that were here within our organization. And they said, huh, you can do 100 policies in a week. And now they're doing 100 policies week in and week out. And so it just showed them what was possible if you actually exploited the system and forced so much work through it that the results would have to come out the other side. And so it was a defining moment for me, but really a defining moment for our business, showing people what was possible by just simply doing what you're told to do. And so I understand that that's not very entrepreneurial, but it's just the reality of my situation.
That's the most entrepreneurial thing. Like that is the most entrepreneurial thing. And that's what I love about authentic, real salespeople. And you're a real salesperson. That's why you got so much grit with you. The best part about this guy is, so you know, he had 200 plus nights in hotels and 16 plus hour days. completely door knocking, completely face to face. Do you know how hard that is? I used to knock at door for pesticides, and I used to get my freaking face slammed on every single time, but then I had that one door. This guy used to go to 200 plus nights in hotels just to get it, and that's what I want to talk about. So if you guys think he's bullshitting, the best part about this is that in 2017, correct, is when he decided that, you know what? I need to document this. I need people to resonate with me. I need people to see that it's not all fairy tales and unicorns, that it's actual hard work. It's a lot of mindset. It's a lot of nights that people don't see and a lot of behind the scenes. So if you can you explain to us a little bit about that moment where you're like, man, I need to take over social media. I need to become an influencer. I need to put content out.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it began with the fact that I was consuming an incredible amount of content over those first really 2 years of being involved in this business. I was on the road. And so when we say over 200 nights on the road in a hotel, it was all travel, driving travel. So it was never flying. It was always going from South Carolina to Georgia. I had a big territory in Georgia. I lived in South Carolina. Closest was about 2 hours to get to my territory, but because of the crazy hours of work, couldn't come home. And so I think 238 nights was the worst for 3.5 straight years of doing that. I would leave every Sunday night, come back Thursday, you know, late afternoon, evening. And when I was in the car, I was constantly listening to podcasts and found Gary Vee and hated him in the beginning. Just thought he was obnoxious and just full of himself. But began, you know, watching, listening to a little bit more stuff, and just became infatuated with this guy and the way that he was documenting his life, especially when Daily V, his daily vlog series came out. But back then it was just the Ask Gary V show, which I loved Q&A because I've got massive ADD, and that was a great way for me to be able to stay connected with what he's actually talking about. So if I can get a question and an answer, that's why I love doing Q&A. Because if I can have a question and an answer, that's, you know, ideal for the way my brain works. But when he started Daily V is what really opened my eyes up to being able to get this, you know, fly on the wall type viewpoint of somebody living their life, but living their life in an extraordinary way. And I saw it for two reasons. You know, one, selfishly, I just saw it for an accountability purposes. It's the ultimate accountability to document your life at the level that we're documenting. And I've gotten pushback from people at times because I've talked pretty openly about the fact that I've become a better person through this process, that I've become a kinder person, a more compassionate person, a more empathetic person. Yep. And it's the ultimate form of self-awareness is being able to watch yourself on video in a million different scenarios when you don't even realize the camera's rolling, to see how you're interacting with people, you know, what your face looks like when someone's talking to you. I would see some of these videos and I'm like, why do I look like I'm about to rip this guy's head off? I remember that as being a pretty pleasant conversation. I'm like, I should probably smile more. Yeah. And these little things. So I would get pushback from people. They're like, oh, so you're saying you had to, you know, hire a videographer and you had to film yourself all the time just to be kind. I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
But I became more kind and that's really all I care about. So
because being able to see it, you know, it's different when someone tells you, hey, you're an asshole. And it's easier to say, wow, I just watched these six videos. I'm an asshole. Like I got to change it. You know, it's something about seeing it yourself. And that's what self-driven people do. They drive themselves. They can't hear it from someone else. You got to show them proof, so much proof that you get someone to videotape yourself, document you. And then you're like, wow, I am jerk. I got to change this. So I love that. Because I get that concept. Now there is a member in my group that wants to ask a question. Yep. So KJ put in here, how would you handle possibly negative reactions from your close environment, like family? That's what many people, including myself, is holding me back from sharing my actual life.
Number one, I would say that's a tough situation to be in, and I've been in it myself. And I don't take that question lightly, and I don't take that situation that person's in lightly. But ultimately, you have to make the best decision for you. And realize that this is, you know, not life or death, but this is life for you and where you want to be. And that has nothing to do with those other people. Now, a lot of times it's a spouse. Like the day, I think it was like January 11th or something, 2017, when I did the first post, when I started documenting my life, when I hit post on that post, my wife called me like 30 seconds later, like in tears. And she said, what in the world was that? And because it talked about income and what had happened in our lives over the last 2 years. And she's just super humble and didn't want our friends to see that and what they would think. And it just, it bothered her. And I had to tell her, I was like, look, you know, I have a feeling I know what I'm doing here. Because I'd been watching so much of the way Gary Vee was doing it and had learned that blueprint of documenting your life, you know, so well. I felt like I had an idea of what I was doing. I was like, but this is going to be super uncomfortable. So you may want to unfriend me, unlike me, ban me, block me, whatever you need to do. But give me 6 months.
Yeah.
6 months just to do this the way I think I can do this. And then we'll reevaluate. And so I think communication there is key. And it wasn't long, you know, 2-3 months later when messages from people would start rolling in about how much of an impact it was making on them and how they were able to take different things that I had talked about or discussed and implement in their lives. And this happened and this happened and this happened. And every single time that would happen, I would take a screenshot and I would text it to my wife. I would take a screenshot and I would show her that week and I'd say, hey, look what this guy said, because that one Facebook Live I did that night, I answered his question. He actually did that thing and this and this and this and this happened. Yeah. And he's talking about how it's changed his life. And so it very, very quickly became a scenario where my wife understood completely what I was doing and that it was way bigger than me. And that it had nothing to do with my ego, that it actually was this the most selfless thing that I had actually ever done. So I think that's extremely important, is just to communicate with those people and express the reasons why you're looking to do it, what you think, because you never know, but what you think is going to happen because of it. And, you know, put a time frame on it. You know, tell them, hey, I'm going to do it for 6 months. Let's reevaluate it after 6 months, because you don't know what's going to happen in the first couple of weeks. And even in the first couple of months, when you start documenting your life like that. But I think having that open communication and being willing to tell them, look, I understand what you're saying. I understand exactly you feeling that way, but here's why I think this is important for me to do. And you know, at that point, you just got to make a decision. If it's important to you and if you think it's going to benefit your life, then it's your life. And I think you need to go all in on that.
Boom. You just got a quote from an ordinary guy doing extraordinary things, people. So I got a question for you.
Yes.
Now, my group and a lot of entrepreneurs, they deal with telling me that they can't balance things. And sometimes I have that feeling of, man, I can't balance things. But you have a different perspective of balance, which I love. You don't believe in balance. You believe in going all in all areas. And I love that, because I believe that too. I think that's why I don't really care when someone's like, oh, balance. I'm like, there's no real balance when you're going in, right? So can you explain to us the imbalance concept that you have? I think you said you like to recognize things as imbalances rather than balances. I think that would be super useful for this talk right now.
Yeah, it's super important, because what I found is the majority of people are using this idea of balance as an excuse and a crutch to work less. Because I think we can all on here agree that we've never heard someone discuss the conversation around balance that didn't have to do with them needing to work less. Like, no one's sitting here going, well, you know, fourth quarter of 2019, you know, I've been completely all in with my family this year. It's time for me to put some more hours in at work and, you know, probably spend less time at home. Like, no one's having that conversation. It's always, you know, I really need to work on my work-life balance. So I'm going to start leaving the office at 4. You know, that's always the conversation that we're having, is why we need to work less. My question is, if you need to spend more time with your family, why not just spend more time with your family? Like, it doesn't mean you need to work less. It may mean you need to go to less happy hours on Thursday, and you need to be in less, you know, dart leagues and bowling leagues and like all this other extracurricular activities, or hang out with your friends less, but it doesn't, certainly does not mean you need to work less.
Yeah.
And so my thought process, and really this all stems around the fact that truly successful people will balance a scale with addition, not subtraction.
Ooh.
And so if you look at it that way, then it's always figuring out, and this is why self-awareness is so important, it's figuring out where the imbalance is and being able to be cognizant of where that imbalance lies quicker. And so if I realize that, like, oh man, I do need to be at home a little more. Like if I become aware of that imbalance, then I can be home a little more, but understand the fact that when I'm home a little more, it's going to create an imbalance somewhere else. And yeah. So it's all about adjusting accordingly. So figuring out where that imbalance is and then adjusting accordingly and adjusting as quickly as possible. But a big thing with balance too, I think, like we just said with communication, is being able to communicate with your family, being able to communicate with your wife or your husband and say, hey, for the next 90 days, I got to go all in on this project that I'm working on. And it's going to require 12, 14, 16 hour days. But hey, in 90 days, we're going to take a trip to, you know, Lake Tahoe. We're going to take a trip, you know, somewhere for the weekend. And that way your family as a whole can look forward to this and they can be, you know, they know that you're working towards that. You can literally, you know, you come home and I've seen this play out where examples where, you know, a guy said, hey, I've got this sales goal and it's going to be 90 days, but if I hit it, we're going to go on this trip. And so when that guy gets home from work, his kids are like, hey, how many sales did you make today? Because they know the goal that he's got to hit in order to go on the trip that they all want to go on.
Yeah.
But it's all about the communication around it. But I think that it's more of a harmony than a balance. If you kind of think of that ebb and flow, that realizing the imbalance, adjusting accordingly, realizing the imbalance, adjusting accordingly,
yeah,
in all the different areas of your life. But again, being willing to go all in all areas, it may mean you need to sleep less.
Yeah. Maximizing your efficiency. And yeah. KJ Kajel, he's from Belgium. Him and I really know this because he started this group with me literally 175 days ago. And I was waking up at 3 a.m. Do I wake up at 3 a.m. anymore? Absolutely not. I wake up at 4:30 now because now I know that I don't need to do 3 a.m. all the time. But when you do have something that you want to get, when you do want success, you got to do some things that you don't want to do. And as long as it's ethical and morally right, then do it. So this is what I want to dive in with you as well, because you're just amazing. I got the chat going crazy in here. Everybody really loves you. They're privately writing me how much they love you. So one question that I want to ask is from Don. He's new to the group, so we want to get him a powerful answer. He put, when dreaming big, how do you deal with skeptical people and the ones that can't see the bigger picture? Do you try and explain it to them or not waste your time?
I think it depends on who it is. Again, if it's your spouse, that's a whole different scenario than if it's, you know, some friend that you've been friends with for 20 years, or is it just a guy that you know? I spend very, very little time caring about what other people think outside of my family. You know, my family is most important to me, and I do care what they think. But when it comes to having big dreams, I think a lot of people are speaking negatively towards that, because when you have those big dreams, especially if you're going after those big dreams, you are basically shining a bright big light on their lack of effort and their lack of dreams and their lack of motivation. And no one wants to be called out, you know, for the things that they lack. And so when you all of a sudden go from maybe having just this normal, average, mediocre life to all of a sudden you've got these big dreams, all those people you used to hang around with that are still living that average, mediocre lifestyle, all of a sudden it's right in their face and they're being forced to realize it. And their initial reaction is always going to be to hate on it. Their initial reaction is always going to be to combat it because it puts them on the defense. And so I think, you know, one thing that I've learned throughout this process, because, you know, I did a terrible job at navigating through, you know, groups of friends and separating myself from people, is you have to be, it's way more sensitive than just cutting people out of your life. A lot of people on social media, including Gary Vee, they'll just say, hey, just cut them out of your life. I don't care who it is, your mom, your sister, your brother, your best friend, just cut them out. I think you need to be a way, way, way more sensitive to that scenario, because these are real people that you're talking about. And these are real relationships that you have. So I think it's a way more touchy subject than a lot of the, you know, so-called influencers or entrepreneurs, you know, want you to believe when they say, you know, screw your mom. Like, that's ridiculous. It's your mom. And so I think you need to take it a little bit more seriously than that. But I think, again, communicating with them is going to be key. Explaining, but then once you've explained what you're doing and why you're doing it, there's no need to, you know, keep rehashing the same stories over and over and over. But with myself, you know, there was a group of friends that I had, and we were extremely close and hung out all the time. And as I had this upward trajectory in my life, it just became a capacity issue. I just didn't have time to hang out. I didn't have time to do these things. And again, spending 200 plus nights on the road in a hotel, if I'm home, I'm going to be with my family. I'm going to be with my daughter. I'm not going to be with my friend. If I have to choose between my friend and a daughter, my daughter wins every single day. And so it was just a capacity issue for me. And I felt bad about that because I did lose some incredible relationships that I had. But we recently did a episode of this show I do called Modern Man, where literally during the show, I had this realization of the fact that it wasn't anything that they did or they were doing that made that separation take place. It was actually who I was when I was with them. And so, you know, this group of friends that I had, it was when I was drinking a lot. It was when I wasn't very productive. It was when I wasn't, you know, living my best life that I was hanging around with them. They didn't have a problem. They were great. Like, they didn't have an issue with alcohol. They didn't have an issue. They were doing great in their jobs. It was the version of me when I was around them that I was actually avoiding. I didn't have any problem with them. I had a problem with me when I was around them, and being around them brought up that, you know, feeling of who I was back in that time. And I just completely cut that out of my life. And I look back and that was a mistake the way I handled that. And that's why I think it's super important to be really, just really careful and thoughtful about how you separate yourselves from people and giving people a reason why. Like, I just disappeared off the face of the earth, and they knew what I was doing because I was documenting it, you know, on social media. And I know, you know, some of those guys don't think very highly of me anymore, and that's unfortunate. And I hate that, honestly. But you know, if it's that or being able to hang out with my daughter when I'm home and being able to achieve the level of success, which provides a lifestyle for my family, then I'm going to choose that every day.
I love that, because you did speak about the number one way to raise your standards is to raise the standards of the people around you. And you just hit that point to a T. So there's another point that I want to get to with you that I really loved. It was called opportunities entitlement. You said you've spoken about opportunity entitlement being an epidemic, and you tell a story about a football player that you interview, and you said that he stated he got what he wanted, but he didn't want what he got. And I actually just did a live video on this concept that people don't realize that they're asking for things, and when they get it, they don't want it no more. So that you got to be careful with what you're asking for, and you got to be careful or conscientious with the opportunities that you're just pushing away. So can you actually explain the opportunity entitlement epidemic?
Yeah, it's an important one, because there's so many people out there that are waiting or searching for, you know, the opportunity, the perfect opportunity, the opportunity that allows me to do what I was born to do. And what I found happens is in that process of waiting for or searching for or looking for, you squander the opportunities that you're in. And what I know is that the opportunity or the perfect opportunity or the thing that you were supposed to do will never come when you're failing where you're at. And so the way you put yourself in the posture to receive that opportunity is by going all in and excelling in whatever opportunity that you're currently in. And this can become difficult, and it's kind of an interesting paradox when you find yourself in a career that is, in your mind, below your level or below where you feel like you're supposed to be. And so you sit there and you think to yourself, you know, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. This is so beneath what I'm capable of. And you tell me I got to go all in on this, and I got to try my best, and I got to put 100% effort into it. And the answer is yes, like it is. Yeah. Because the opportunity that you're waiting for is more than likely waiting for you to go all in on the opportunity that you have in front of you. And that's just a fact. You never hear a story about a guy that was working a job and was just kind of phoning it in, was just kind of there showing up, and then all of a sudden the opportunity of a lifetime appeared. It's always the guy that was, or girl that was, in a situation where they were going all in where they're at. And then because of the fact that they were going all in where they're at, people heard about it, or, you know, someone found out about how well they were doing where they were. You know, someone just saw what was in that person, that, man, this person is, you know, the example of sweeping streets, right? Like, whatever that may be that you're doing it to the best of your ability, that translates over into any other business, into any other industry, and any other opportunity. So someone will see that and they'll see, hey, this guy, this girl, like, man, they're not meant to do that. But look at the integrity that they have and the way that they operate within it. Like, look at the way that they're doing it to the absolute best of their ability. They deserve to be given this opportunity. They've earned to get this opportunity. And that's when those things happen. And so I think, you know, we're in a generation of people that feel like they're entitled to the opportunity. And so they squander the opportunity that they have right in front of them. You know, people think that they're going to get out of college or get out of high school, and they're all of a sudden going to be put into an opportunity to make the type of money that took their parents 30 or 40 years to make. Yeah. Or that they have the opportunity to live the lifestyle that took their parents 30 or 40 years to create. And that's just ridiculous. Like, these things take time. I'm a big proponent of this phrase, aggressive patience. To me, you know, it's all about being patient, but being aggressively patient means you're going all in and making things happen on a daily basis. So kind of on the micro scale, you're going all in, you're hustling as hard as you can. But on the macro scale, you're patient because you know that you're doing the things along the way that are going to get you there.
Let's go. You're firing me up, Tyler. Like, seriously, I'm right here sitting behind the screen, like, so excited to get off this call and just like implement everything that you're stating, because it's so factual. So there is another thing that I have to ask you before letting you off is, just because you seek comfort doesn't mean life gets easier. And you stated this on a couple of your talks, and I love this because I think that everyone faces this. Things start getting a little weird. People are like, this is getting hard. Someone starts staring at you because you're dressing different. You're looking nice, or you're talking different. Oh man, you're talking different. Oh man, you're dressing different. And then we get weirded out because we're like, man, I'm uncomfortable. But something that I understood from Les Brown is that he said, you don't fit in where you're at, right? Because you're trying to, you have something different on you. You have a destination on you. And that's why you don't fit in. And then when you get out of that place where you were at and you're going to where you need to be at, you're not going to fit in because this is an unfamiliar place for you. So with that being said, can you explain your concept of, just because you seek discomfort doesn't mean life gets easier?
Yeah, it's something that I talk about almost every day. And this is the phrase, it's, if you seek discomfort, the world will deliver you pleasure. And if you seek comfort, the world will deliver you pain. So I'll say it again. If you seek discomfort, the world will deliver you pleasure. If you seek comfort, the world will deliver you pain. And so in my life, we've just made it a mission, and my business partners as well, to seek discomfort in as many areas as we possibly can. And so let's just use the easiest analogy, like the gym. If I go to the gym and I stay comfortable, if I don't go through any pain, if I'm not put into any type of discomfort, is there going to be any growth that's created from that environment? No. So it's only in seeking discomfort at the gym that I actually make progress at all. And so what does that look like on a practical basis within our businesses? Well, it's doing things that you've never done before. Like, those are the most uncomfortable. Now, the problem is there's this concept of feeling like a fraud.
Yeah.
And I think it's the greatest thing that you can ever do. And what I mean by that is, when you're doing something you've never done before, but you're doing it with the confidence that you're going to crush it, that is a fraudulent environment to be in. Like, you've never done this before, but you're doing it with the effort level and then the confidence that you're going to nail it. Like, how is that possible? That's the type of confidence that you have to have going into these things. But it's only in seeking discomfort. It's only in embracing those uncomfortable circumstances, those things that you've never done before, those levels that you've never achieved before, those number of hours in the day that you've never, you know, worked before. It's only in those times where you'll find out what you're truly capable of. And what I've realized is that there's this false sense of potential that we each feel like we have. And the reality is when you go all in on your life, once you feel like you're getting close to your full potential, your potential scoots out a little bit further. Ooh. And so once you put massive amount of effort into a short period of time, every single time you do that, your capacity, your potential will inch up a little bit further. And I kind of use this analogy. If you think about, you know, when you're have a big Thanksgiving dinner and you've got the kids table and the grown-ups table, if you're sitting at the kids table and you walk up to the grown-ups table and you kind of like lean up and you barely get your eyes over the table and you see all this incredible food and it's just so much better and the conversations are better and the drinks are better and all that. And you just, that's all you want to do is you want to get to that grown-up table. What you realize is when you get to that grown-up table, there's another table. And then all of a sudden you get a little bit of a glimpse of the other side of that third table.
Yeah.
And the food's better and the conversation's better and the people are better. And it's this constant process of trying to get to that next table. And the only way you do that is by doing things that you've never done before, by doing more than you've ever done before, by doing more than anybody you know. And that's always going to be uncomfortable. And so we can look at it from that standpoint, and then we can look at it from almost a, it seems silly, but like a true discomfort, like things like my business partner does ice baths. He has a plunge pool and he gets in, you know, 42 degree water every day. And, you know, whether it's cold showers or whether it's, you know, I recently, you know, did a couple of crazy ultra marathons for the sole purpose of putting myself in an extremely uncomfortable position and seeing how I would react. And when I did it, it unlocked multiple areas of more capacity and more potential that I didn't realize that I had in myself. Like literally I went from not training whatsoever. The furthest I'd ran was 7 miles and I ran an ultra marathon. And yeah. Then 14 days later ran another ultra marathon, zero training. Like it was like 33 miles or something like that. And the furthest I'd ran was 7, but it put me in an extremely uncomfortable position where all of a sudden I could put more effort into a shorter period of time. And every time you do that, like you talked about raising your standard, you know, you do raise your standard by raising the standards of the people around you. But another way you raise your standard, which ultimately is your potential, is by putting in massive, massive, massive amounts of effort into short periods of time. If you think about, you know, a water line on a pool, you flush a bunch of water into a pool and the water level raises. When the water level goes back down, that water line's a little bit higher. And then you flush a bunch more water in there and you put more water than you've ever put in that pool before and the water goes up. When that water goes back down, now that water line's a little bit higher. So every time you do that, that represents your capacity and your potential of what you can do. And that's what I want to do in my life, is constantly be pursuing that full potential and allowing that full potential to be spread out a little bit further. And what I think we'll find in life is that we'll never, ever, ever truly reach our full potential, because the idea of full potential actually doesn't exist.
Holy cow, man. I hope you guys that are listening to this runs back this whole entire episode. I was going to say run that little clip back, but like, no. Run the entire episode back. Shout out to Stephanie. She said the same thing. This is definitely a session to listen to again and again and again. Amazing content. So I know that we're closing off, and these last two questions, they're more for fun. We just want to kind of depict you. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, well, three legends, dead or alive, not including myself. I know I'm a legend, but not including myself, who would it be and why?
Jeez. This is terrible. This is terrible. You said it has to be three legends?
Well, what do you categorize as a legend? Like, I categorize myself as a legend, and anybody in my group, if I have dinner with them, I had dinner with a legend, you know?
Mm-hmm. I would say one of them would definitely be my great-grandfather, for sure. Just because from what I've heard of his story, going from, you know, living on a farm to playing pro baseball, I just think it'd be incredible to hear. And just side note, that's the reason why I document my life the way I do, because if I could turn on YouTube and watch my great grandfather's vlog right now, I would watch it all day long today.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
But I can't, so my great grandkids will be able to, though. The second person would probably be, that's a tough one. It'd probably be some type of person that led a huge organization. So someone like Steve Jobs, you know, someone that led a huge, huge, huge organization from the top, top down. But from what I hear, he wasn't the best guy. But That would be interesting. And the third, I mean, the third, I would have to say Jesus 100%.
Definitely.
If I could choose and not choose Jesus, I'd be a terrible person. If I could have had the opportunity to sit down for dinner with Jesus and I said, no, I'm going to choose Prince.
Well, man, you sat down with, you sat down with Erwin McManus, and I'm
so, which is almost like Jesus.
Exactly. Which is almost like Jesus, man. When I saw that you did a talk with him, I got so hyped up because I haven't seen anybody get on a talk with him. And I've been reaching out to him to get him on my podcast. I fell in love with his book, The Way of the Warrior. I gave him
It's the best book I've ever read.
Best book ever. Thank you. Yeah. Shout out to Tyler for agreeing with me. I've bought that book for probably over 12 people. Like literally.
Yeah.
That book
is amazing. So that I just bought all of his other ones. He's got like 12 other books. Yeah, the other ones are great too.
Yeah, I got
The Artisan Way. Yep. The Artisan Soul, The Barbarian Way. They're all, I just finished another one on the plane the other day. It's really, really good. But yeah, he's incredible. His definition of, if you watch that podcast that I did with him, I asked him about that idea of balance, and the way he answered that question was so like his, the way he speaks is so poetic and just beautiful.
Yes.
It's like, it's incredible. I think the way he said, if you think of balance as less of equality, but more as an asymmetrical symmetry, then I think you'll have a different definition of balance. I was like, continue. And he said, if you think about balance as in the earth is in balance with the sun, and that all the planets in the solar system are in balance, even though they're different sizes and different distances, so too in our life, are we choosing which area deserves the greatest gravitational pull during that particular season? And I was like, did I prep you for this in 2012 for this question? Like, it just came off his head just like that. And I was like, this is unbelievable.
Awesome.
But yeah, he's probably had one of the biggest impacts on my life over this last year, hands down.
Definitely. So my last question is, what is one of your recommended books?
Beyond that, I would say The Four Agreements, Don Miguel Ruiz, QBQ, Question Behind the Question. That's a huge one, that your life will ultimately be determined by the level of questions you ask yourself and others. That's a big, big, big thing. But Four Agreements, The Secret, you know, when I went through that rapid transformation that first year of my life, I had The Secret on CD. It was like four CDs, I think. And it's the only thing I listened to in my car for an entire year, And it's like the most entry level, you know, into the law of attraction. But it definitely changed the way I looked at everything.
I love it. Man, I appreciate you. If you can let the listeners know and the people a part of my tribe know where they can find you, your blogs, your podcast, just you in general, and just also how people can get a hold of you in regards to business.
Yeah, so everything is at Tyler Jack Harris. So Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, it's all Tyler Jack Harris or TylerJackHarris.com. At TylerJackHarris.com, I created a book based off of my podcast, Sales Wolves. It's called The Sales Wolves Book, and it's on there for free. It's a PDF. But you can find me pretty much anywhere. Instagram is where I spend the most time, but Facebook's where I started, and that's where I have probably the biggest reach.
Awesome, man. Well, I definitely already downloaded your book and I put it into our Empower portal. I did it this morning because I saw it and I was like, got to put it in there. Now, if you don't mind, I want to go ahead and take a picture with you and everybody so we can go ahead and show off that we were with the man, the myth, the legend. So here we go, guys. One, two. Man, I hope you guys enjoyed this secret bonus episode. I actually thought I lost this episode 2-3 months ago when I got to dive into this conversation with Tyler Jack Harris. And suddenly I found it. I'm super excited that I got to share this with you guys. All I ask is this. If you got a major takeaway, let me know in the reviews. Let me know what your major takeaway was. I know in this conversation, we dive into a lot. We dive into the pillars of life. We dive into the pillars of mindset. And we dive into the pillars of leadership. And for me, this whole conversation was a major takeaway. So if you like what I got to say, you like conversations like this, you enjoy the Power Talks, make sure you do the right thing and press that subscribe button, smash it, push it, whatever the case may be, just make sure that you subscribe. And most importantly, if you like what I got to say, you like this episode, it's something that can resonate with you, it's something that can resonate with others, do me a favor and push this out to your network. And because we're always trying to get better, we're always trying to improve the show, we're always trying to improve our guests and our conversations, make sure that you leave me your feedback. I always appreciate the criticism and I always appreciate the love. And because you listened to this episode, I got a treat for you. Go on and make your way to the empowertribe.com/push website. Again, it's empowertribe.com/push. I got a treat for you, a gift for you, a message to let you know that I love you, I care about you, and that the Empower Tribe supports you. And last but not least is this. If you like what I got to say, I will see you in the next episode. Let's go and let's grow.